caucus.
So, Tamer Arafai, if you can respond, and also the fact that the 30,000-member agency UNRWA is not just supporting the people who face famine in Gaza, but also throughout the Middle East. We're talking about Lebanon and Jordan. We have 30
seconds. That's a great point. That's a great point, Amy, to remind that UNRWA is the agency that is fully in charge of Palestine refugees, from registering them and their descendants to offering a very sturdy education system to them through 700 schools, to offering all primary health care. So stripping UNRWA of funding not only shrinks its ability to respond to the looming famine in Gaza, but also puts at risk the schools, the access of kids to proper education, the vaccines, the mother and child care, everything across the region, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza.
We want to thank you, Tamer Arafai, a spokesperson for UNRWA, the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Shufa Dokadus, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO just finished our annual All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We want to thank all of our supporters for helping us bring the community engaging, unique, and all-around fun special episodes and killer marathons. We wouldn't be able to do it without our listeners. And if you missed out on any of the programming, you can check out the list of specials at kboo.fm/thrills.
Be sure to tune into Radio Lost and Found, where many radio mysteries will be revealed. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour mediascape of found sounds, forgotten records, outre recordings, and more, coming to you every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots, from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a church in Brookings, Oregon, wins their lawsuit against a city ordinance that limited their soup kitchen. Community members turn out to support Portland Street Response. And in national news, Missouri lawmakers take on AI deepfake image generation in new legislation. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. I'm Althea Billings. A federal judge has sided with a Brookings, Oregon church in a lawsuit against the city, which tried to limit the number of days the church could run its soup kitchen. In 2021, the city council of the Southern Oregon Coast City amended their zoning code. They changed it so that so-called benevolent meal services in residential districts could only serve free meals twice a week, during business hours, and for no more than 3 hours at a time, and that they'd need a permit to do so. This was in response to residents around the church complaining that the soup kitchen was feeding homeless residents. The judge ruled that St. Timothy's Episcopal Church was, quote, substantially burdened by the city's land use ordinance, and that feeding the hungry was a religious exercise that is among, quote, the core beliefs that guide the church. The judge also ruled that the city failed to show any compelling interest for the restrictions. The city had argued that the ordinance was needed to maintain peace and order and prevent crime, but the judge rejected that idea, seeing no causal relationship between the rules they created and those goals. Judge Matthew Clark also noted that there were other institutions like hospitals, nursing homes, daycares, and country clubs in the same residential district, but they weren't subject to the ruling. He said that was inconsistent. Quote, "It is unclear why a church serving meals to the public for free would be considered a restaurant under city zoning laws, but a golf course or bed and breakfast serving paid meals would not," end quote. The judge said the city ordinance was, quote, "ill-conceived," and he urged Brookings officials to recognize that homeless residents are not vagrants, as they were called in the ordinance, but instead citizens in need. Some Missouri lawmakers are taking a stand against threats based on images generated by artificial intelligence, known as the Taylor Swift Act. The bill is getting bipartisan support. For more detail, we go to Farah Siddiqui.
Missouri lawmakers are concerned with protecting people from the potential risks of increasing accessibility of AI-generated images and videos. The Innovation and Technology Committee is planning to vote on the Taylor Swift Act, a bill that aims to make it illegal to publish or threaten to publish AI-generated sexually explicit images of people. St. Charles area Republican Adam Schwadron authored the bill and says it's important to be proactive in protecting ordinary citizens.
They were able to take it down for her. However, common Missourians would not have the same protections afforded to her. Not everyone is Taylor Swift.
The bill would allow victims of the fake image attacks to sue the creator in civil court and recover the offending images. St. Louis Democrat Bridget Walsh also supports the bill and says it's necessary in this day and age, given how easy these videos and images are to access and create. Schwadron says that while they will need to learn how to track items originating from the dark web, he's optimistic that legislation will cover most common offenses.
The cases that we are seeing across the country of classmates that are being attacked by other classmates of theirs that are creating these images, and it's affecting young girls and even boys, and those are a lot easier to track when they're being shared from phone to phone.
Schwadron says the name Taylor Swift Act was fitting due to her ties with the state of Missouri and her recent ordeal with the explicit deepfakes. For Missouri News Service, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
Portland residents packed a meeting hosted by the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing last night, largely in favor of protecting and expanding Portland Street Response. Street Response is Portland's behavioral health response team. They respond to certain emergency calls to help people in mental health crisis, and they were created to help divert calls away from police. Portland officials say that more than $3 million may be cut from the program due to budget shortfalls and the fact that the team was initially funded by one-time COVID relief dollars. Portland City Commissioner Rene Gonzalez has seriously restricted the program since it's come under his purview, and he helped prevent it from going citywide since he took over the Fire Bureau. He's pushing the Multnomah County Joint Office of Homeless Services to take over part of the funding. Residents at the meeting voiced support for giving Street Response a separate branch of emergency services, pulling away from the Fire Bureau, plus taking the team 24 hours citywide and ensuring its long-term funding. The Committee on Community Engaged Policing will vote on their recommendations for Street Response on April 17th. Whatever they recommend will be sent to the mayor and the chief of police, and they're required to formally respond within 60 days. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says rebuilding Baltimore's Key Bridge will be challenging and expensive. An Alabama Democrat flips a state legislature seat, and former Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman dies at 82. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Certainly, we have a clear direction from the president to tear down any barriers, bureaucratic as well as financial, that could affect the timeline of this project.
Following the partial collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore Tuesday, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg says rebuilding won't be easy or cheap. He says it's too soon to know when the Port of Baltimore will reopen, and adds lawmakers will need to authorize more than $1 billion in the 2021 infrastructure law for emergency relief. A new poll shows a majority of Americans now disapprove of Israel's war against Hamas, with support falling from half in November to a third now. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to reschedule the meeting on a possible Rafah ground offensive, which the Biden administration is trying to stop.
His office has agreed to reschedule that meeting that would be dedicated to Rafa, which is a good thing.
On Tuesday, Democrat Marilyn Lands won a special election for a state House seat in Deep Red, Alabama. Hers is the latest Democratic victory in a campaign run on the right to health care, especially abortion.
I want to repeal the bad ban on no exceptions abortion. I want to protect IVF and contraception, but I also want to be a champion for health care, mental health care, but health care in general.
Republican Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene says she won't regret it if Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries becomes the next speaker after she filed a motion to boot Speaker Mike Johnson.
We have a Speaker of the House right now with Mike Johnson that is supporting Joe Biden's policies.
With several Republicans leaving early, the House will soon have a one-seat GOP majority, making an unprecedented change of party control possible if the Speaker's chair is vacated. A California judge says she favors disbarment for John Eastman, an architect of former President Donald Trump's strategy for subverting the 2020 election results. The D.C. bar is considering the same penalty for Trump DOJ official Jeffrey Clark, and Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani had his license suspended in 2001. Former Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney says the 2024 election is a choice between President Joe Biden and a threat to American democracy.
Democrats, independents, Republicans, that we work together, we vote together, we make clear that Donald Trump is not an acceptable alternative.
Polling shows President Biden is narrowly leading against former President Donald Trump, but the survey also found Trump benefits from the inclusion of independent and third-party candidates. The New York Times is reporting that a Russian group linked to the Kremlin spread disinformation about Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, before she announced that she has cancer. Finally, former Senator Joe Lieberman, the first Jewish vice presidential candidate of a major party, died at the age of 82 on Wednesday. He suffered complications after a fall. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A coalition of groups is working to protect California's giant sequoia groves from devastating wildfires. A new report shows significant progress has been made in this past year. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Crews have been ramping up wildfire resilience projects to thin out brush and deadwood in California's giant sequoia groves, clearing twice as many acres in 2023 compared with 2022. The Giant Sequoia Lands Coalition is trying to avoid a repeat of the disastrous megafires of 2020 and 2021, which killed about 20% of large mature trees in their native Sierra Nevada range. Dr. Joanna Nelson is with the nonprofit Save the Redwoods League.
We remove fuels, we get to a safe place to do prescribed burning and to do cultural burning, which is always led by indigenous people, which is another practice of taking care of the forest and reducing wildfire risk.
Sequoia National Park is just one part of California's giant sequoia groves, which stretch over 26,000 acres. A new report shows that in 2023, the program treated nearly 9,900 acres in 28 groves and more than 14,000 acres since 2021. Crews have also planted 542,000 native tree seedlings in severely burned areas over the past 2 years. Nelson says the groves must be retreated about every 8 to 10 years.
The cost of inaction is loss of giant sequoias in their native range and big fires that spread because of the fuel continuity. And so we risk further loss of trees that are anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 years old if we do nothing.
The groves have built up quite a bit of deadwood fuel because until the last few decades, it had been national policy to suppress almost all fire, which led to intense firestorms that incinerated entire groves of old growth trees. It is now understood that judicious use of fire can clear out the understory and be beneficial to the forest. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio, then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with some rain showers and an overnight low of 42. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 60. Today in history, in 1979, a coolant leak at the Three Mile Island Unit 2 nuclear reactor outside Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, leads to core overheating and a partial meltdown. It's the worst accident in U.S. commercial nuclear power plant history. The quote of the day is from American abstract expressionist painter Grace Hartigan, born on this day in 1922. She said, quote, "I perceive the world in fragments. It is somewhat like being on a very fast train and getting glimpses of things in strange scales as you pass by. A person can be very, very tiny, and a billboard can make a person very large. You see the corner of a house or you see a bird fly by, and it's all fragmented. Somehow, in painting, I try to make some logic out of the world that has been given to me in chaos. I have a very pretentious idea that I want to make life. I want to make sense out of it. The fact that I am doomed to failure doesn't deter me in the least," end quote. The construction of a memorial called Remembering the Children in South Dakota will begin soon. It's meant to honor the children who died at a Rapid City Indian boarding school. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Construction on a memorial to honor the nearly 50 documented children who died at a Rapid City Indian boarding school starts soon. Officials say crews will finish the memorial by Native American Day this October. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
After World War II, the city of Rapid City, through a congressional authorization, annexed 1,200 acres of land in West Rapid City. The move displaced natives living near the former Sioux Sanatorium. Native Americans were then moved to what's considered North Rapid. A new memorial will pay homage to that displacement, as well as honor 50 children believed to have died while the facility was a boarding school.
The intention is really to build empathy and understanding in our community.
That's Amy Sazu, executive director of the Remembering the Children Memorial.
To help people understand their community members and neighbors a little bit better, understand race relations in our community a little bit better, see some of the symptoms of historical trauma, and understand that, you know, understand those that are still suffering from the impacts of historical trauma a little bit better.
The memorial will be built on tribal trust land belonging to the Rosebud, Oglala, and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes. Once construction is complete, the next phase of the memorial will take shape, which is art installation. Sazu, who is Lakota, says the memorial will look like a public art space.
The spirit of different parts of the story have to be present, and there's no better way than to do that than through art. And so everything on site, actually, so there's benches, there's a little plaza where people enter, there's a food shelter where people can have meals. Everything is being designed by artists.
The memorial will also feature a sculpture by Indigenous artists who will work collaboratively with South Dakota sculptor Dale Lamphere. The sculpture will likely be installed by spring of 2025. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
The Montana Supreme Court has ruled in favor of tribes and Native organizations in a Native vote case. The court struck down some state laws that would have hindered the Native American vote, ruling the laws unconstitutional. One measure would have ended Election Day registration, and the other aimed to prohibit third-party ballot assistance, which Native voters on reservations rely on. The decision affirms a 2022 ruling. Native American Rights Fund staff attorney Jacqueline De Leon in a statement said the decision is a resounding win for tribes in Montana. Western Native Voice Executive Director Ronnie Jo Horse was also pleased with the ruling. In a statement, she said the court reinforces the principle of equitable access to voting services and the protection of rights for all voters, especially those residing on reservations where voting barriers are much higher. Plaintiffs, Western Native Voice, Montana Native Vote, the Blackfeet Nation, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes, the Fort Belknap Indian Community, and the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, filed suit in 2021. They're represented by the Native American Rights Fund, the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Montana, and Harvard Law School's Election Law Clinic. Oregon State University's Global Hemp Innovation Center has received a $10 million federal grant to work with tribes to spur economic development. The funding will assist 13 tribes in the western U.S. to develop manufacturing capabilities for materials and products made from hemp. The project also is intended to create educational and workforce development opportunities for Native students for jobs in the emergent bio-based economy. Bio-based manufacturing focuses on using renewable biological resources from land and sea to produce food, building materials, industrial products, and energy. According to the center, properties of hemp-derived materials have potential to replace those manufactured from oil, gas, and coal. The project is funded by the USDA. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Michigan has made significant overhauls of its youth justice system with expanded diversion and the elimination of fees. Farah Siddiqui has more on their efforts.
Michigan recently implemented a significant juvenile justice reform package following recommendations from a task force made up of prosecutors, sheriffs, judges, and child advocates. The reforms expand diversion eligibility, allocate state funds for programs, limit diversion periods to 3 months, and eliminate fines and fees. Jason Smith heads the Michigan Center for Youth Justice and emphasizes the shift towards rehabilitation, community-based alternatives, standardized policies, risk assessments, and the removal of fines and fees in the system. He says the new system is much more comprehensive.
If you don't serve a 10-year-old in the juvenile justice system, which we believe you shouldn't, what do you do with them? But they need services, what happens? And I think that what we will see over the next couple of years with the expansion of diversion and community-based options will answer those questions.
The major reform involved changing the child care fund reimbursement model to incentivize local jurisdictions to invest more in community-based services. Not only does the Michigan package eliminate most fees and minimize costs that would have previously gone to youths or their parents and the counties that serve them, but Richard Mandel, who authored the Sentencing Project's recent report, America's Growing Movement to Divert Youth Out of the Justice System, says overall diversion programs save money.
Diversion tends to be cheaper. It's not a net cost. It's a net savings, even in the short term. And it's especially a net savings financially in the long term because these young people are much less likely to come back.
Smith adds that you can serve 10 kids with high-quality services in the community for the price of one leaving residential placement. For Michigan News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
Small dairy farmers won't have to apply for a permit that would have required them to install expensive drainage systems usually reserved for large-scale farms. This follows a lawsuit filed by small dairy farmers, and the Oregon Department of Agriculture announced last week that it's withdrawing its decision to require small dairy farms to apply for this permit. Last year, dairy industry lobbyists got the department to reinterpret its definition of a confined animal feeding operation, or CAFO. They complained that small dairy farms had an unfair advantage over big dairy farms due to CAFO regulations. The rules would have required small dairy farms to install expensive drainage systems, even if they only have a handful of cows, sheep, or goats. CAFO regulations are necessary for large farms that produce tons of manure and have a much bigger impact on the environment. The small dairy farmers filing the lawsuit argue that their animals spend most of their lives outside and their business largely serves their local communities. The lawsuit stopped the regulations from kicking in, but the decision's withdrawal is only temporary, and the lawsuit will continue in federal court. Four dams on the Snake River are a major source of hydropower, but they have another footprint too, significant amounts of methane. That's according to a new report from Tell the Damn Truth. The findings undermine clean energy claims for the dams. Eric Tegedoff reports.
A new report finds four dams in the Columbia River Basin are big emitters of methane. Research from the organization Tell the Damn Truth finds the four lower Snake River dams in eastern Washington emit the equivalent of 1.8 million metric tons of carbon dioxide each year. Sierra Club Deputy Western Region Field Director Robin Everett says this undercuts some of the claims that the dams are helping provide the region with clean energy.
It's really clear from this report that we have to take this a lot more seriously, that there are some real impacts as far as emissions go from these dams.
The report says the dams reduce the equivalent emissions of burning 2 billion pounds of coal annually. Defenders of the dams say they're important for barging and irrigation for the area's agricultural lands. But Everett says the dams have another effect on the region. They block the dwindling population of salmon and steelhead from traveling upstream on the Snake River. She says that not only hurts fish populations, but also the tribes that rely on them.
We have an obligation for them to be able to fish. And if there are no fish to fish, we have broken the treaties.
Chinook salmon are also an important source of food for orca on the West Coast. Everett says protecting salmon is important not just for tribes, but the region as a whole.
Our moral obligation to the salmon and the orca that depend on them are met as well.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A growing number of homeowners face repeat flooding. One analyst says people need access to funding to make their homes more resilient rather than just rebuilding. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As sea levels rise and storms become more extreme, a growing number of homeowners are struggling with flooding. Not just once, but time and time again.
People are just faced over and over with damaging floods and then having to put their lives back together each time.
Anna Weber is with the nonprofit Natural Resources Defense Council. An analysis by her group found that as of 2022, almost 45,000 U.S. properties are what the National Flood Insurance Program considers severe repetitive loss properties, which means they've experienced multiple severe floods. That's about a 20% increase from just 4 years earlier, and many of these homes are likely to flood again.
Concerningly, the number of these properties that have had mitigation actions taken to reduce their risk, for example, homes can be elevated, or maybe the residents of the home could take a buyout and move someplace safer. That number is not increasing as quickly.
Weber says instead of just reimbursing homeowners for their losses, it's important to make sure people have access to funding to make their homes more resilient, so they can break out of the repetitive cycle of flooding, rebuilding, and flooding again. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The mysteries of spring are just starting to reveal themselves, but can you solve this riddle? For that, we go to Pearl Stark with the weekly point puzzle produced at KPOV Bend.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to take two types of farm animals, drop the last letter of one, and put them together to form a timely event. Well, the answer is equine and ox. Drop the E and you have equinox. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, and I say,
for the new puzzle, take something that might be associated with Easter in two words, drop three letters, and you are left with a company that might help you in a nor'easter. So again, take something associated with Easter in two words, drop three letters, and you are left with a company that might help you in a nor'easter. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, your ears are mighty long. Yes, don't you know they were put on wrong? Every little soul's gonna shine, shine. Every little soul's gonna shine along.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of March 25th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Matea Carlin, Birdie, David Rosenberg, and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez, Eric Tegedoff, Farah Siddiqui, Suzanne Potter, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. The global environment, geoengineering, ocean warming, and air pollution in South Asia. France out front on aid to Ukraine. And